but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group, joining us. We'll always talk with you on Fridays, Wilner. I got to know, this week, big story, LSU. We had the governor in Louisiana, the AD at LSU. You had an interesting tweet about how, there's a handful of ADs, handful of schools that are driving the market for coaching. Tell us more about that.
Well, Scott Woodward, who was LSU's AD until a few hours ago, and signed Brian Kelly to a huge contract that's requiring a huge buyout, also, signed is the Jimbo Fisher buyout at LSU, at Texas A&M a few years ago. And if you combine the damage that Woodward's free spending ways have caused, it's well over $100 million in other people's money, state institutions. He's one of these ADs who is, I think he cares more about hiring a big name coach, regardless of the cost, than maybe hiring the right coach, because I don't think Brian Kelly was a good hire at LSU. And there's other ADs like that too, that just, it's easier to spend money if it's not yours. And they've broken the market in a lot of ways.
Yeah, around the Blazers back in the day when billionaire Paul Allen owned the team, there was a catchphrase in the halls. They would say spam. And it stood for spending Paul Allen's money. And it was a lot easier for the executives of the team to do that. Does this cause a correction in the marketplace in your mind, or is this an isolated thing in the state of Louisiana?
I'm not sure if it'll cause a correction because there are going to be so many openings. I mean, we've already got some, Florida, Penn State, and LSU are three of the top, 15 programs in the country, and there's more to follow. Florida State could open. Auburn could open, right? Wisconsin. And there's going to be more. So I think that the spinning of the coaching carousel this winter is going to be such that the market is going to keep going, and a lot of these schools are pursuing the same people. Like Lane Kiffin is probably the top candidate at Florida, and he might be the top candidate at LSU, so he's going to just drive the price up. What we need is a change in how the contracts are structured so that they're, lower guaranteed money, but more incentive. Now, that is going to require the schools and the ADs to kind of win a staring contest with the agents, and they haven't been able to do that so far.
What do you think Kiffin does? If it's Ole Miss, if it's Florida, if it's, there's other LSU, other jobs open, what does Lane Kiffin do? What's best for Lane Kiffin?
Oof. Well, you could certainly argue that Mississippi is as good a job as Florida right now, because roster construction just depends on your financial support, right? It doesn't really matter that Florida has better tradition than Mississippi or is in a better recruiting area than Mississippi, because the Rebels have the dollars to get players. Now, LSU, to me, is clearly a better job. If you're looking at it from where do I have the best chance of winning a national title, LSU is clearly better than Florida or Ole Miss.
Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, we all know he did a nice job at Oregon State, but he is struggling this season to get traction in Big Ten play. They lose to USC. They lose to Nebraska. They lose to UCLA. They lose to Indiana, Michigan this week, tomorrow. They're at Minnesota. If he loses at Minnesota, is he in trouble?
I mean, I kind of think he's in trouble no matter what. They're 0-5, and one win is not going to stave off the hounds, I don't think. Now, will he get fired during the season? That I don't know. But I would bet, I think the future is very bleak for him in East Lansing. It's a hard job. I thought it was a mistake for him to take it in the first place, because you get just lost in the machinery of the Big Ten. If you're at Michigan State, you're never going to be the equal of Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State. And it's a tough gig, and the expectations are pretty high. He would have been better off staying at Oregon State and finding a West Coast job, in my opinion. But I can't see a way where he's going to save his job.
Three of the last four are against Minnesota, Penn State, and Maryland. He's also got Iowa in there. I kind of think if he wins three out of four, you know, he has a chance to stick around. But anything else, I think he's in real trouble. Let me ask you this. If he does become available and Oregon State is out there, could you see a return of Jonathan Smith, or is that something Oregon State should shy away from?
I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, given what he has meant to that program and community. You know, it's in some regards, Oregon State would have to just put hard feelings aside and evaluate, is he the best coach for us? And part of that evaluation is, who's going to help drum up the most financial support for NIL and revenue sharing? And if the Beavers determine that there would be a lot of support from their big money folks, then yeah, they should probably think hard about hiring him. Now, on the whole, you know, the sequels don't do that well. I was looking at this earlier. Mack Brown did pretty well when he went back to North Carolina for the second time. But the other cases, like John Robinson at USC, for instance, you know, they don't go as well as the first time. So the Beavers need to be careful, but they certainly have got to look at through the lens of who's going to help us raise the most money for our roster.
You brought up USC. USC goes to Nebraska tomorrow. USC, a six-point favorite in Lincoln. It's a game that jumped off the board at me because I do not trust Lincoln Riley in a game like that. What do you make of USC at Nebraska?
Well, the Trojans have not won, other than Purdue, they haven't won a Big Ten road game, you know, on the other side of the country. And they have lost a lot of those games in the fourth quarter, win ahead at some point in the fourth quarter, and then they just can't hold their leads. Lincoln Riley makes a bad decision, something like that. They found a whole bunch of different ways to lose those kind of games. And I actually think Nebraska is pretty good this year. And USC's got, this is going to be a hard game for them to win. They have a lot of hard games coming up, and it will be very interesting to see what happens. They are 6-2 right now, but what if they're 8-4, 7-5? I mean, there's going to be a lot of criticism, a lot of crying for a coaching change at USC, and his buyout is huge. I think it's $80 million or more. So very interesting, you know, as a part of the coaching carousel to watch. Certainly USC is high on the list.
Sean Lewis, San Diego State, is doing a really nice job. You know, they're off to a great start this season. They'll be a team that gets talked about down the stretch if they continue to win. Everybody looking at Boise State and them and going, okay, yeah, are those the two best teams in the Mountain West? But does Lewis, in your mind, become a candidate somewhere? How much defense does J.D. Wicker at San Diego State need to play here?
Probably a fair amount. I mean, I don't think they need to worry about UCLA trying to poach Sean Lewis, which would make a lot of sense on some levels, but UCLA looks down on San Diego State, so I can't imagine they would do that. You know, they got to be careful. They may need to renegotiate a contract, give him an extension, and kind of cross their fingers and pray. He was a very good hire. He did a great job at Kent State. Then he became the offensive coordinator at Colorado. It didn't work out with Dion, but that was not a reflection on Sean Lewis as a head coach. And San Diego State is kind of reaping the benefits of their vision. But there's always the double-edged sword of success. If it's San Diego State or Oregon State with Jonathan Smith, Washington State with Jake Dickert, you know, if you win enough at that level, you're going to get poached. And I think that those schools, you know, they can't worry about losing a coach. They got to hire the best person who's going to help them win and then just deal with the consequences later.
Oregon State, Washington State, the first of a two-game series in the Pac-12, the home and home. This one's at Reser Stadium tomorrow. I expect Washington State to win that game, but how much does Oregon State's season to this point, 1-7, even though the game's on big CBS, how much luster is off this game for you, or would it be off anyway, given that everybody's already kind of looking at 2026 and saying, okay, that's the new beginning?
I mean, for me, it would be a bigger deal if Oregon State had a postseason pathway, right? If both teams were playing to try to get bowl eligible or to get their fifth wins. But the Beavers are, you know, they're toast in that regard. So it doesn't have quite as much allure to me. I mean, I'm still going to be tuned in and still find it very interesting. But certainly it's a little bit disappointing that the Beavers are not in contention for a bowl bid. I expected them to be there at this point, and they're not.
You obviously have done some reporting on the Pac-12 front, Pac-12 championship game moving forward in football. Feels like Vegas is where it needs to be. Do you have an update on where it stands right now?
No, not anything confirmed. I talked to Merton Hanks recently, the football operations chief, and he's targeting December for a final decision. And, you know, they're going to have to get the ADs at the schools to approve on this. Of what they decide, it's either going to be Vegas as a kind of a permanent neutral site. They could rotate it, Vegas, LA, Phoenix, Seattle, you know, NFL stadiums throughout the West, Levi Stadium maybe, or they could do the what the Mountain West currently does, the home field of the higher seed. And I think that there's a lot to be said for having a cool atmosphere at your game rather than playing it at a big place that's two-thirds full, for instance. And so it'll be an interesting decision for them to make. But I think that they want to try to get it figured out by December.
It feels to me like you go to Vegas, right? And I'm not just saying that because I want to go to Vegas and cover a game there. It just feels like if you want that association with what the Pac-12 once was and you still want to say, hey, it's the fifth best conference in America, doesn't Teresa Gold have to put that game in Vegas if that's the claim that she wants to make, or am I going too far with it?
I'm not sure. You know, what if, all right, so let's say they put it in Allegiant Stadium and it's Texas State against Washington State and there's 20,000 people there and there's, what, 40, 50,000 empty seats. I mean, that doesn't look very good. Now, some of the power conferences have that problem, right? There have been times when the ACC and Big Ten championship games have not drawn well. But I think that they need to pay attention to the optics and the atmosphere and what's going to be best for fans and the athletes. So I don't know what they're going to decide. I get what you're saying. You know, you want to be number five, then you got to provide a big time platform and stage. But there's also something about having a home field and a packed house and a great atmosphere that looks good on TV as well.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. Wilner, Tuesday night, we're going to get CFP, College Football Playoff Rankings Selection Committee reveal. ESPN's shoulder programming will light up. The glow will be difficult to miss. But you're an AP Top 25 voter. Historically, these things have mirrored each other, at least the initial rankings. What are you expecting with the first reveal?
Well, I'm expecting that they'll be similar to the AP poll for sure that comes out on Sunday. Maybe not exact, but I think a lot of the teams are going to be, you know, within two or three spots of their AP ranking in the CFP version. I'm also looking to see, you know, where's going to be the top group of five team. You know, Memphis, I think it'll probably be Memphis, but are they going to be 18th or are they going to be 24th? Where is the fourth Big Ten school going to appear, right? We know Oregon, Ohio State, and Indiana are going to be in the top 10, but how far down are you going to have to go to find number four for the Big Ten? How many SEC teams are going to be involved? A lot of things, you know, the first poll doesn't mean much. It gets a lot of attention and a lot of criticism. It doesn't mean much. But it does kind of give you a sense for what the committee thinks of the conference, the overall strength of each particular conference based on where they have their teams.
What do you do with Oregon if you're the committee?
See, I actually think Oregon is an interesting case because the eye test, they look a lot better on the eye test than they do with their actual resume, right? They've only played one ranked team and they got beat badly. Right. So that, you know, I'm ranking them like 10th or 11th in my poll because of that.
You taking heat for that? Are you getting heat from Duck fans?
No,
for that?
Not actually that much. You know, if it weren't for the fact that they have looked so good, their resume itself is like that of a number 16 or 18 ranked team. No wins over ranked opponents. Now, part of that's not their fault. It's the schedule. But it is what it is. I kind of think the committee may have him, you know, in the 9-10. Certainly all depends on what happens this week with results everywhere. But I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the 9-10-11 range based on the fact that they haven't beaten a ranked team. And they lost to the only ranked team they played. And they lost badly at home.
If Oregon loses to Iowa or Washington or USC, are they in jeopardy of not being in the playoff in your mind, or is a two-loss team from the Big Ten getting in?
I think that they will be in. It will be a little bit nerve-wracking on Selection Sunday. If Oregon finishes 10-2 and they have two losses in Big Ten play, then they're probably not in the Big Ten championship game, right? I mean, that's probably going to be Indiana, Ohio State. So 10-2 Oregon that finishes anywhere from third to like tied for third or fourth in the Big Ten with no victories over ranked teams, you know what? They're in maybe in a little bit of jeopardy. I would still bet on them making it, but they're probably looking at 10-11 seed. They probably aren't guaranteed a bid on the morning of selection day. So it'll be interesting to see, and that's entirely plausible. If they lose to the Huskies and USC doesn't make the final ranking or vice versa, it could be a little bit hairy.
I want to ask you one last thing here before I cut you loose on this great Friday, Halloween, by the way. Hey, by the way, what's your favorite Halloween candy, and what's your least favorite Halloween candy?
Give me 100 grand. And give me anything. Well, I don't like I'm not big on the sugary gummy type things.
Yeah, same.
But I really do not like almonds in my chocolate.
There you go. No almond joy. No joy with the almond joy.
I like almonds themselves.
Yeah.
But I do not like the combination of almonds and chocolate, whereas I do like peanut butter and chocolate.
There you go. See? Complicated guy, but it makes sense in a way. All right. Hey, one last thing. Dan Lanning, has come out a few times and said, I'm not going anywhere. I'd never thought he was going anywhere, but it looks smart to me that he's coming out at times when jobs are open. You know, almost like the perception that he's turning down jobs, that he's not really getting offered. But I also think he has one of the best jobs in America at Oregon. He shouldn't want to be going anywhere unless it's an NFL job or something that he can't pass up.
I would agree. He has everything he needs to win a national championship, certainly reach the semifinals, win the Big Ten. He does not have, it's a great lifestyle for his family in Eugene. It's a great place to live. He doesn't have the intense media scrutiny that you would in maybe, Columbus, Austin. It's a little bit different vibe in that regard. And he's well taken care of. And the entire university, the big thing is the entire institution is dedicated to winning football and aligned on that. So, yeah, he's got a really good gig. If I were Lanning, I would not I'd look down the road and see what happened to Jonathan Smith. Slightly different circumstances, but, both are grass is greener type of situations. And if I'm Lanning, I'd say, I'm staying right here unless Andy Reid retires.
Yeah, I mean, you could offer Chip Kelly as Exhibit A, Willie Taggart as Exhibit B, Jonathan Smith as Exhibit C, Dennis Erickson, Mike Riley to the NFL and back. I mean, there's just so many cases of guys leaving a good situation for a question and it not ending up well. John Wilner, you have a great Halloween. I appreciate you making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
Good stuff from Wilner. Look, I've said all along, Dan Lanning, Sophia Lanning, they want their three sons to graduate from the same high school. And Lanning has said, he tells his kids, if I keep winning, as long as I keep winning, this is where we'll be. Keep that in mind. All right, coming up, what's on tap this weekend? Huge college football weekend, huge NFL weekend. Will we get a World Series? Game 7? More ahead. What's on tap coming up?